Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you from all over the world. Today, we're going to talk about the latest on health and nutrition, including using a common herb. It is called rosemary, and using grapefruit extract with it and having an incredible benefit inside your body. I'll tell you what it does to allow you to have reduction in your wrinkles and have your skin be more taut. Then there's new research findings on Alzheimer's. When does it begin? Well, generally, it begins 30 years before any symptoms at all. And I've been saying this for quite some time, that every single choice you make, every time you have something that you eat or drink, even the air you breathe, even the stress you're under, that every one of those that are negative impact upon our well-being. This study confirms that. And also, gut bacteria can cause and predict rheumatoid arthritis. That's a new study, and I'll tell you about the latest on that and a lot more on health and healing. And then today, a commentary from Professor Henry Giroux on the racist killing machine in the age of anti-politics. Also today, I have written a commentary after a conversation with a longtime friend who suggested that now that Bernie Sanders is supporting Hillary Clinton, that he said he's going to vote and support Hillary Clinton, much like your traditional liberal community will. That's fine. But when I ask, you have Jill Stein, you even have Gary Anderson that has better qualifications and has better platforms than either Clinton or Trump, well, no, quote, better the devil I know than the devil I do not. So today my response to all of you who believe, well, what else can we do? Better that devil and Hillary Clinton than not. I want you to have a different perspective, so I'm going to share mine today on what it means to vote for Hillary Clinton or continue to support Bernie Sanders. Today we'll also be hearing from the Clinton Chronicles. I want you to know a little bit about the Clintons' background, because their background is what's in front of you. It didn't go away. They didn't change. There was no metamorphosis from Arkansas and master pathological liars to what they've become. And they have an awful lot of people who are part of their political machine now in every area of government and media, entertainment. They had their defenders. This is a part I don't think they want you to focus on. Let's begin. According to this study published in Food Nutrition Research, grapefruit and rosemary taken together for 2 weeks was able to show a substantial improvement in this study on skin protection by maintaining a steady state systemic concentration of compounds capable of protecting the skin cells from ultraviolet radiation alteration. That's good. So, in this study, they used a group of people who took this drink that had rosemary and grapefruit, and they had less skin damage. Well, at a time when many people go outside without any protection, including internal protection, because if you really want to protect your skin, you want to take two nutrients above all else. Quercetin protects your skin and vitamin C. I would suggest 1,000 milligrams of both before you go outside, and that will protect your skin for some of the ultraviolet damage that otherwise would occur. But this also is good. A glass of grapefruit juice with some rosemary extract in it. Now, from Indiana University comes a study on magnesium. And magnesium, of course, is an essential macronutrient, a large mineral. It comes in different forms, But historically, I've always recommended magnesium for people who are concerned about having a heart attack because it protects the heart. In fact, magnesium is responsible for more than 100 different biological actions at the heart and in the heart that can protect you from a heart attack. And that's why I always recommend people take 1,000 milligrams of magnesium from citrate, and you could also take magnesium oxide, as well as high heat cayenne and 2,000 units of vitamin E. And you put all that into a little container, and you just keep it with you. And if you ever believe that you're having a heart attack, that's what you take. Because it'll immediately thin the blood. It'll immediately go to the brain to protect from stroke. It'll immediately go to the heart. So it could save lives. For something that's so inexpensive and so easy, that would be my emergency anti-heart attack or stroke kit. But here's something else magnesium does, according to this. Magnesium can help lower your blood pressure. And that's according to the American Heart Association's journal Hypertension. Now, we know you can get magnesium from sea vegetables, from green dark leafy vegetables, from nuts and beans and grains. And you should be able to get most of it. And the median amount of magnesium per day is about 368 milligrams. I believe that is too little. I believe to be ideally healthy and to keep your blood pressure down, keep your heart healthy, you need 800 milligrams a day. But that's still good science. And from the Daniel Amen Clinic, there was an article that showed that, quote, researchers find Alzheimer's begins in the brain 30 years before any symptoms. So science is beginning to unravel the mystery of Alzheimer's, and what they're discovering is alarming. Researchers now believe that Alzheimer's disease begins, well, that would be when you're in your 20s and 30s. And that means that my generation, that are in their late 40s to 70, would be at most risk, because we did, if you're the average baby boomer, you drank a lot of things, ate a lot of things that increased brain inflammation. A cola, sugar, all that pizza, alcohol, marijuana, all that negatively impacts the brain. And that's the studies. Now, that's separate from the cannabinoids, which are the essential components of marijuana that are very beneficial for different medical conditions. But people don't realize when you're smoking marijuana, you're also taking in the carcinogenic activities. And unfortunately, those who deem that it's all safe are simply wrong. But in any case, my generation had really better pay attention. If you're above the age of 45, there's almost an inevitability that you're going to suffer from memory loss and dementia, and much faster than would have happened in previous generations before the baby boomers, because they didn't have the amount of processed food, they did more regular exercise, and we're inundated with all these pesticides and toxins. So you can detoxify the brain, taking in lots of green juices, especially juices high in superoxide dismutase, can make a difference. I would suggest choline and inositol, acetyl-L-choline and inositol, very important for the brain. Phosphatidylserine, very important for the brain. And the B-complex, generally 50 milligrams. Vitamin C is important. But chlorophyll is a major detoxifier of the brain. So make sure you're getting green vegetable juices. For example, if you had celery and cucumber with some parsley or kale or collard greens, mustard greens, all that's good for the brain. And then have blueberries, blackberries, and pomegranate. That's also good for the brain. So keep in mind that when you find yourself having any form of brain disorder, you are then beginning the stages of what will become Alzheimer's. Also from Yale University, they found that how body temperature affects the immune system's response to a common cold virus. This was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. What they found was that when you use a sauna or your body temperature heats up like you're outside, that actually kills viruses, which is one of the ways that historically a lot of people would help themselves by raising body temperature. And by the way, that's one of the reasons that the body has a fever in order to, just like diarrhea. Diarrhea allows it to flush chemicals, toxins, bacteria, viruses out of the body. Your runny nose is one way that the body's trying to expel the phlegm from your throat. The body's trying to expel when you cough and spit. The body's trying to expel. All these are mechanisms. The body's trying to help you. What do? We do just the opposite. We want to turn off all these mechanisms. We want to stop sneezing, stop coughing, stop runny nose, stop diarrhea. But did we learn anything about what caused the underlying condition? No. So Yale is saying, pay attention. When you raise that body temperature, you can kill some viruses, including in increasing interferons in response to the cold virus. And that's good. And also from the University of Illinois, hops extract is studied to prevent breast cancer. An enriched hops extract activates a chemical pathway in cells that could help prevent breast cancer. So that's not the same as drinking beer to get hops. This is an actual extract of the hops. And there's a compound, and that compound called 6PN increases the detoxification pathway in the cells that have been linked to a lower risk of breast cancer. That's good. And finally, gut bacteria, good gut bacteria from good foods, predict and prevent rheumatoid arthritis. And this was published from the Mayo Clinic's center, and it was published in Arthritis Rheumatology. And what they're saying here, quote, the bacteria in your gut do more than break down your food. They can also predict susceptibility to rheumatoid arthritis. And then it goes in to talk about how it's done. So here's the takeaway message. When you eat foods that are pre or probiotic, and you're getting anywhere between low end 1 billion to as high as 50 billion probiotics at a single intake, or 5 or 10 billion several times a day, you are then seeding good, healthy bacteria in your gut. That then sends messages and stimulates your immune system to help protect you. So when you're eating right and you're drinking the right juices and healthy waters, you're putting the good bacteria to work. But when you start eating meat and donuts and sugar and alcohol, you're feeding the bad bacteria, and that makes you more susceptible to the purines and gout and arthritis. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Now, before we take our break, I would like to relate to my friend and a lot of other people on the left or within the liberal community who believe that, and they did this before, they did it with John Kerry, they did it with Al Gore. Just imagine this. Had they voted for Ralph Nader, and had Nader been elected when he first ran for office, there had been no 9/11, because we wouldn't have military bases in Saudi Arabia and other places that caused the original anger. We wouldn't have 900 military bases around the world. We would have had universal health care. We wouldn't have had mandatory vaccines. We wouldn't have had genetically engineered food representing the majority contaminant in our food supply, certainly in corn and soybeans. We would not have had all of the dead and disfigured American soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We wouldn't have had regime change in Honduras, in Syria. Libya would still be the number one country in education, women's rights, and Muslim women's rights. But also they accepted other religions there, including Christians. You would not have had the Federal Reserve bailing out Wall Street. You would have legitimate bankruptcies, and that money would have gone to protect homeowners. you wouldn't have had the crimes of Wall Street, because long ago they would have been challenged. Those people would have been in jail. You would have healthier school systems, teaching critical knowledge to kids so they could themselves learn how to think better. Just imagine how different the world would have been had those liberals said, "But rather the devil we know." Okay, what do you know about the devil in Hillary Clinton? Here's what you're getting. If you supported Bernie, you're now going to support Hillary. First, you're getting someone who recognizes the right of Israel to remain the largest apartheid regime in the world, with over 2 million Palestinians virtually kept in their own internal internment camps, the largest outdoor prisons in the world in Gaza and the West Bank, and all that that bespeaks. So you're supporting apartheid. You're supporting debtors' prisons. Now, we had no debtors' prisons because being poor was not a crime until Bill Clinton took the law, with Hillary Clinton. Remember, they were co-presidents, as they will be again. And Bill Clinton eviscerated the major support of those who were poverty-stricken. And he gutted the welfare system. He gave the Defense Department more money than they actually asked for. I never will forget coming on the air and doing a commentary as, how do you give $8 billion more than what they even ask for? That is pandering to all those political votes and favors, because how many of those private contractors will later hire you at $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to come in and do a meaningless, stupid lecture, plus your private jet and all the other amenities you request, like a real prima donna, you and your wife. But you always get a quid pro quo when it comes to who you give and how much you give to in Washington. That continues. Hillary Clinton is fully supportive of lobbyists. She supports APEC. She supports ALEX, the American Legislative Exchange Council. She supports the Business Roundtable. She has lectured repeatedly at the Council on Foreign Relations, the creation of David Rockefeller, which is the part of the silent hand that controls much of the foreign policy of the world. She supports the Walmart. She was a lawyer for Walmart. And while she was supporting Walmart's Buy America, Walmart was having clothes manufactured and sold, knowingly doing this as if it were American made. Hillary Clinton supports home foreclosures. Many of the banks and mortgage companies that she has received money from have engaged in massive home foreclosures. And not once, not a single instance, did the bank say, "You know something? We put you into this position by encouraging you to sign a liar's loan that we then sold those mortgages off in packages, and we knew that you didn't have the money to pay for this mortgage if there was a crisis. Now that there's a crisis and you don't have your job and you can't pay the mortgage, we're going to give you a break. We'll let you stay in your home. Just give us 15% of your annual income against your mortgage. You can stay there." Not one bank did that. To the contrary, 7 million homes foreclosed on, almost 30 million Americans made homeless. Hillary Clinton supports that. She supports homelessness because she supports the companies that exploit people. She supports the debtors' prisons because one of her largest financial backers is the private prison corporations, three of them, and she receives lots of money from them. In fact, one of her people are from Monsanto, another is from private prison corporations to give her the inside counseling. In fact, one of the people helping run her campaign is from Monsanto. She supports genetically modified foods. She supports mandatory vaccines. She supports keeping all laws that identify, hold harmless all pharmaceutical companies for any vaccine that's knowingly produced that's dangerous. she supports that no one from corporate America go to jail, rather pay a fine and your stock goes up. She supports making it a criminal act to use marijuana or other drugs. She supports the war on drugs. She also supports the death penalty. She supports the insurance industry and the hospital industry charging you hundreds of billions of dollars. That it'll actually total over $1 trillion this year that we're in, of profiting off your disease. She does not support universal health care. She does not support freedom of choice. In fact, she opposes universal health care. She supports expanding our military-industrial complex. She supports Obama's $1 trillion-plus dollars on new nuclear weapons. She's an avid hawk. In fact, Hillary Clinton is the most pro-aggressive neocon politician in the history of the United States. She is more apt to go to war in more countries than anyone else. Now, why? We can have a discussion on her motives. But that's what she supports, because she's the one who also supported regime change. She personally had her State Department that she ran intervene in Honduras to oust in a coup a democratically elected but liberal politician who was president. She supported with Nuland in her State Department the destabilization of the Crimea and Ukraine and put into place the funding for fascist Nazi supporters to position against Russia. She fully supports NATO, a criminal organization, totally criminal. They're genocidalist. And she supports increasing NATO's impact, including it was NATO that bombed out Yugoslavia for the Clintons, her husband and her, and bombed out Libya. She supported the complete destruction of Libya. Not only has she not found it possible to apologize, but she cackled in that sociopathic manner. We came and he died. But look at how he died, and look at how many people, innocent civilians, died with him, over 22,000. Look at what Libya has become, from the number one prosperous nation in Libya, with the number one educational system, with the highest literacy rate, with the most rights for women in the entire Muslim world, with the most advanced healthcare system, where everyone was treated for free. You were given over $50,000 when you were married. You were given a farm with equipment and seed for free if you wanted to be a farmer. You were given a car. No one was without a home or an apartment. And yet, we consider that a threat? No, it was not a threat. I am not suggesting Gaddafi was a great man, but I am suggesting that his country did not deserve to go from number one out of 54 nations in Africa to almost dead last. And it is the center for all terrorist activity in the world. More is going on with more terrorist groups now in Libya than any place else. That was Hillary Clinton. So that is what you support. You support the killing of innocent people in Libya. You support regime change. You support taking a four-year famine in Syria, the breadbasket of the Middle East, and then funding the people to then oust Assad. And who would have taken over if Assad was out? Well, possibly the ruling family of Jordan in cooperation with the Wahhabist of Saudi Arabia. But in any case, you support Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has sponsored more terrorism, funded it, protected it, and implemented it throughout the Middle East, including in Yemen. You supported the war in Yemen. Again, millions of people made homeless, starving, without water, because of you. Personally, individually, because had you said, no, we should not do this, and you told Saudi Arabia, you don't do this, or we don't buy any more of your oil, and we don't send any more munitions, they would have stopped. That's the power she had. But instead, she wanted money for the Clinton Foundation, and in the typical way that tacky Washington works, we'll give you a clean bill of health. We'll give you a place on the UN Commission on Human Rights. We'll even make you head of the UN Commission on Human Rights, even though you beheaded more people this year and more killed more political prisoners than any other country in the world, and you crucified them after you beheaded them, and you kill gay people. But I don't want the world to know that I support you when you kill gay people, because I want the gay people to vote for me, so I'll play both sides. In America, we're so stupid, we don't seem to pay attention to the larger picture or care. So, but in return for me turning a blind eye to your human rights abuses and your treatment of women and you having no constitution and no freedoms, no freedom of the press, no freedom of assembly, no freedom of what you want to wear, and even making political dissent heresy, punishable by imprisonment, lashing, or death, I'm going to turn my eye on all that, give you over $80 billion worth of weapons, but in return, give the Clinton Foundation some money. Wink, wink, nod, nod. You support that. You also support the fact that she supported Greece and its austerity programs, a completely corrupt European Union, fascist in the extreme, especially that puny little bunch of fascists running France, including Sarkozy, who is an ultimate fascist, and you supported Sarkozy. You supported the complete dehumanizing process of not helping, but exploiting with privatization and austerity, cutting people's pensions so they had to dumpster dive. You support that. So just remember when you're supporting that. You also want to expand our nuclear. You also, Hillary Clinton, you supported the DARC Act, so we should know if our food is genetically engineered. You supported fast-tracking GMOs. You supported more coal technology, the number one polluting contributing factor to global warming. You support that. You did not have a single industry that you wanted to see closed down. Instead, you support nuclear because your original campaign was funded in part in Arkansas by an Arkansas nuclear manufacturer. You also support a full-spectrum dominance foreign policy. You support the expansion of NATO. You support the demonization of Putin, calling him Hitler. You want to have a war with Iraq, and or you support Israel having a war with Iraq. And you also believe that there should only be a minimum living wage, but not a maximum wage that allow people to actually live. You've consistently, on 44 separate occasions, according to the actual text, you supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TTIP, and you and your husband lobbied heavily for GATT, NAFTA, and the World Trade Organization, all of which have decimated union jobs. Yet you're still smart enough to know who you can always rely upon, who want to maintain power, position, and closeness to the Democratic base in Washington by supporting those union officials that will vote against their own union interest, but it always helps their interest. There's always a place at the table for them, but not their members. And you and your husband both support private corporate hegemony over democracy, and you continue to shield the big banks. You have stood fast against the reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act, which caused our entire economy to be changed. You have voted for the Patriot Act. You thought it was a great idea. You believe that civil liberties should be stripped away. You believe that the National Security Agency should have unconstitutional rights that are not guaranteed, so we have no rights. You believe that everyone's phone should be monitored, every single stroke of a keyboard should be monitored. You believe the FBI should have expanded powers to infiltrate every single protest movement, no matter how benign or peaceful. You believe that enemies lists should be kept like your husband did when you asked for special names from the IRS, as if we forgot that. You also believe that any woman who made any claim of sexual harassment or rape, which were multiple ones, far more than Bill Cosby, that somehow you're a good feminist and you'll get other good feminists to defend your husband and attack the women who were the victims. I'm just trying to figure out what part of feminism ideology that falls into. So I guess if you get sexually abused or raped, or you brag to your lawyer, a girlfriend that you've had for 10 years while married to you, Hillary, and this lawyer girlfriend said that Bill bragged about how he had over 3,000 conquests, 3,000 conquests. Yeah. And that's someone we're supposed to believe and trust. Yep. And you also are the extreme hawk. There's never been, not even Margaret Thatcher, as hawkish as you. But if we were to take the worst of Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and Obama, and Nixon, put them together, you're stronger. You're smarter than all of them. And you're more ruthless. So that's what the devil I know bargain is. And you support Edward Snowden rotting or brought back, put on trial. So a man who exposes the crimes against citizens is the enemy. And one who commits the crimes against the citizens is able to maintain power. So you support the militarization of our police. You support asset forfeiture. So $4 billion last year were taken without any arrests, any warrants, anything. Just legally, people were traveling, and the police stopped them and stole their money. Even now, having a little card reading machine that they can put your credit card in and take all the money out of your bank. And you support that. You supported torture. You supported waterboarding. You supported rendition. You supported the death of 500,000 innocent children. In fact, you were not even afraid to have your spokesperson, who you've now put in a major position on the platform committee of the Democratic Party, Madeleine Albright, her company. She went on Leslie Stahl on behalf of the administration, meaning you and your husband, and when asked, 500,000, a half a million Iraqi children have died because of the sanctions. Is it worth it? And she said, yeah, it's worth it. So you support the death. Preventable death of 500,000 children. But what if those were 500,000 children where the only number counting were all a hedge fund, equity partnerships, all the people working on Wall Street, all the people working in the Fortune 500 companies, all the persons in the major media, all the Hollywood celebrities? Let's say we found 500,000 children amongst them. Would you support that their life being taken through starvation, through contamination? Would it be worth it then? Because when you support Hillary, you're supporting genocide. So maybe in that vacuous, imaginative place you call home within the liberal community, you can justify that, Nation Magazine, Mother Jones. I cannot. But again, I like the larger argument that if you're going to support something, be honest about what you're supporting. Torture, rendition, half a million kids dead, over 6 million people dead and displaced around the world because of current wars and displacements of regime change. All those people coming from Libya who are now without home and country, that wouldn't happen without Hillary. And Bernie, you're smart, buddy. You had a lot of people fooled, especially young idealists. But for those of us who are little deeper on our examination, there we knew it. We called it out. You supported the disastrous F-35 jet. Now, Bernie, here's an idea. You were right about supporting different types of education that would be free at the public level, but not the not giving up the debt. I believe that you could give up 100% of the debt, and you know how you could get rid of all debt, $1.2 trillion, all debt, not a single student in America owes a single penny? You could stop your foolish, corrupt F-35 jet boondoggle. That's over $1.5 trillion. You'd even have $300 billion left over to apply to de-ghettoization. You see, you can say some nice things about how Wall Street has too much power. Ask yourself this. What have you done to stop the foreign policies? What have you done to actually challenge Israel? You made an ambiguous statement about Israel and the Palestinian issues, but not one that could be used against you. And why didn't you go against Saudi Arabia and all the other oil states? And why didn't you go against NATO? And why didn't you go against we, the United States, and our intelligence agencies, usurping the Constitution, the Bill of Rights? So that brings me to this. Today in the United States, we have a killing machine, and it has become spectacularized, endlessly looped through the mainstream culture apparatuses, both as a way to increase ratings and as an unconscious testimony to the ruthlessness of the violence waged by a racist state. In the increasingly violent landscape of anti-politics, mediation disappears. Dissent is squelched. Doubt me? How about this? WikiLeaks has revealed actual documents that every single political, environmental, or corporate demonstration or protest in America on the internet or in person is now infiltrated. The people are considered domestic terrorists and therefore put on watch lists for simply speaking the truth. So we no longer have a unhindered freedom of speech. There is a consequence to that. We have repression operating with impunity. The ethical imagination withers, and the power of representation is on the side of spectacularized state violence. You see, we look at the violence of a white-on-black or black-on-black in the police, and that gets our attention and galvanizes us, as it should. But why are we not galvanized when whole families are vaporized by drones, where 70 people in a wedding party, all innocent civilians, are killed, and there's nothing more than a first denial that it happened, and then when it was irrefutable, just an apology and giving a few $100 for each person? Why does that not galvanize us if we believe that a black life matters and should, but we don't believe that an Iraqi life matters, or Afghanistan life matters, or Samoan life matters, or Sudanese life matters? What does it say about us as a society? Well, Henry Giroux speaks eloquently on the issue, because violence, both at the level of the state and in the hands of everyday citizens, has become a substitute for genuine forms of agency and citizenship, a mutually informed dialogue and community interaction. For example, why don't we just select police from a neighborhood to be stationed in the neighborhood? Why can't we have individual station houses in every neighborhood, manned only by men and women in uniform, and also civilian boards, civilian individuals working there with therapists, not to imprison someone using drugs, but instead to help them? People who are your neighbors, their kids are in school with your kids. Who better to try to have a dialogue with you as a person that has a need to be protected and live safely within a community, and you as a person that if you see and sense something is wrong, you have a person you can speak with who will not treat you as the other, but rather as a neighbor with concerns? How much more differently would it be if there was legitimate dialoguing at the local level from people living in the level and of the same ethnicity, the same background? I think that would make a major step to this whole process. There was a concept by an author called Balibar who said that citizenship is emptied of its content. Now imagine there was a time when all of us, myself as a baby boomer and many of you as baby boomers, when we knew what we were about because we had character development, morals, ethics, a respect for life, and depending upon our parents and their grandparents and our teachers, We didn't discriminate against the value of a life. We honored all life. We all looked at a community as our community, something we all shared, and hence did our best to maintain a sense of civility, a sense of commonality. That's what it means to have a content of the social fiber, the ethnic understanding, the cultural differences that are both unique, but also encouraging us to appreciate how wonderful it is to live with a multicultural, multiracial, multiethnic group of people, not just people who all sing from the same hymn book. That is a part of what it means to have a citizenship emptied of its content. The right to be represented is ceded to the financial elite and the institutions of repression, or what has been called repressive state apparatuses. When people say, well, gee, Gary, you seem to be against government. Absolutely the contrary. I am a completely 100% for government that represents the authentic needs of the people, that are there to protect the people, the environment, animals, humans, and live by constitutional boundaries so that we do not have agencies of government that become corrupted by their own power, that are bloated bureaucracies, that then are there to threaten and intimidate, to take away our rights of assembly, our rights of speech, our rights of uniqueness, our rights of differences. I don't want to be threatened by a government that has all the power to make decisions unilaterally, that can kill anyone, arrest anyone, trespass anywhere, break laws, and not be held accountable ever for any of it. That's the government I'm against, 100% against. But if you're for Hillary, you're for enlargement of government, ever-growing government, ever-growing bureaucracies, especially when you can appoint 1,400, 1,500, 1,600 loyal, educated technocrats out of your Ivy League palaces that come into these positions, rotating 1 year in or 2 years into an agency to run it to make sure your policies are being handled, and then back into industry, exploiting the expedition to their betterment and your protection. That doesn't represent government of and by and for the people. Also, all these apparatuses, what do they actually do? As if we have to repress the historical memories of racial violence waged by both the police and other racist institutions, as we have to deny the social inequalities that have historically existed, as long as we, the working middle class, did not have debt, we didn't have credit cards, we lived within our means, we had savings, we had a free education or minimally expensive education, we had jobs, more jobs than what we could have. But there was still a class society. There were still those who came from the homes of the bankers' families, and they had the opportunity for the more elite institutions, the better-paying jobs. But we still coexisted, even with our social differences. Today, our social differences create the disparity of incomes, the inequality that has been magnified far out of what it was when I was growing up. I went to the same school with the kid whose father was a lawyer and I was the friend because we all played ball together, we wrestled together, we roughhoused together, we were friends together, at least through high school. Today, we wouldn't be together because we would be in public schools deprived and depreciated because of bloated bureaucracy that absorb all of the money with little getting to the students' actual needs or the teachers that deserve it, and instead being managed where administration absorbs so much and does so little and is so inept and so corrupt. But not then, but yes, today. We were the last generation not just given the opportunity, but insisting as part of our responsibility to learn to be critical thinkers. And we are, unless we have forgotten. So you see, we have not forgotten how toxic the consequences of a culture of violence that saturates everyday life. We're in a new historical era, one that is marked by lawlessness of the rich and powerful, extreme violence, yes, Call out those who are bullies. They deserve it. Arrest those who have committed a crime against, more often than not, someone they know. They do not deserve to go without being judged and punished, so they have an opportunity to be redeemed and reenter society and then given another chance. But why do we not call out the greater violence, where instead of one person being shot, there are a million exposed to depleted uranium and hundreds of thousands shot from drones and aircraft? Why is that violence any less significant? This deep-seated racism and bigotry is reinforced by a culture of cruelty that is the modus operandi of the neoliberal capitalist, of which Hillary Clinton is the poster person. We have become a cage culture, putting people in cages and having them fight. How far and leap do you have to go to see chefs arguing and competing for some prize to show that they are better? Their victory standing on the neck of someone who is the loser. And how far is it from going to the kind of fighting we now see to some form of weapon fighting? It's only a blink away, and it's going to happen within the next 10 years, because what we see now will no longer satisfy the unrequited need to see violence and pain inflicted. That's just a dimension of the sociopathic nature of extremely unsettled, subconscious, epigenetic, dysfunctional behavior. We're a culture of combat, a hyper-masculine culture that views killing those who are more vulnerable as sport, as entertainment, as policy. The United States is in the midst of a crisis of governance, authority, and representation, and as historical narratives of injustice and resistance fade, there emerges a further crisis of individual and collective agency, along with a crisis of the identity and purpose regarding the very meaning of governance. From Pacifica, where governance is 100 scorpions and a giant bathtub fighting each other, what ultimately gets done is irrelevant. The fact that they believe they each have the right of mandate as stations implode is a consequence. Multiply that across corporate boardrooms, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, in the halls of bureaucracy, where everything is outsourced and no one takes responsibility for the fact that their collective agency and their meaningless governance has led to the despoiling of all that was once of value. As democratic public spheres disappear and the state increasingly turns to violence to address social problems, lawlessness becomes normalized, and violence becomes the only form of mediation. This is fueled by a discourse of objectification and of race-based and cultural-based pathology, which often finds expression not only in police violence, but also in scattering mass shootings and tsunami of everyday violence in America's major cities. Chicago is just one example. But also remember, for every police officer that shoots an innocent, unarmed person without provocation, without need, how many more have stopped, have created a sense of measure, and said, I will not do this? I believe that we need to respond accordingly and give a sense of praise to those who have not used their power in a way that would objectify and then vilify those that they feel are the other. It is too easy to paint everything as black and white, as all good or all bad, and we make that mistake constantly. Americans are witnessing not simply the breakdown of democracy, but the legitimization of a society in the grips of what might be called a politics of domestic terrorism, a kind of anti-politics that rejects the underlying values of a democracy and is unwilling to reclaim its democratic tendencies while deepening its civic principles. The U.S. is deep in and the entrails of an updated authoritarianism, and until that is recognized, under such circumstances, violence will escalate. People of color will be killed. Poor whites will be killed. And yet the real victims will never have their story told, because we do not go in and look at ghettos and say, how did this become a ghetto? How long has it been a ghetto? How much help are the people here given? What are you doing to give work, to give a sense of true cultural identity? Where are you giving hope? Instead, we look at the person, maybe one out of 1,000, one out of 5,000, that goes across that line and expresses themselves wrongly, as if that represents all the people in that environment. It does not. And we must be clear on that. But are we willing to look at how we have ghettos? No, we are not. Of how we have 265 million Americans at or above or below the poverty line? No, we are not. Are we willing to have a discussion about the 16 to 18 million who are hungry each day as children? No, we are not. The epidemic of diagnosing children with disease they don't have? No, we will not. So if we can't even have a discussion about an over-medicated, over-treated, diseased society, of one that is filled with debt that we're not willing to forgive, to give them a new beginning, then how can we possibly change? And that is the society. That is the true face of the devil you know. So when you look at the next black that is shot, when you look at the next white whose home is dispossessed, when you go through an entire Appalachian area and see an invisible population so poor they have no political representation, they have no advocates, when you see millions of people living in shelters on the streets and cars, and when you're trying to make that illegal, so as long as you can punish them by putting them in jail for being poor and therefore returning to debtors' prisons, you, my friend, who are supporting Hillary Clinton, you are also doing that. It is your foot on their neck. It is you tasering them. It is you, because you've empowered those who you should know and absolutely do know have only sociopathic tendencies. So when you put someone with sociopathic tendencies in a group of about 10,000 friends who are equally mini-me sociopaths, take away their pedigree from Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Columbia, take away that they worked at Goldman Sachs, take away the fact that they have been in and out of government services and worked for corporate America or the Business Roundtable, you're still dealing with a cultural pathology. And that's who you're supporting, because you support the leader of those people, the person that will allow them get out of jail free, the persons that will take us into unnecessary conflict, the people that defend those like Israel that are engaged in the purging of innocent people. That means you're enabling them. Are you willing to ask yourself today, how low will you sink before you acknowledge your own culpability in voting for someone because they are a liberal or because they're a Democrat? Those terms should have been thrown out with a 28-day-old rotting fish head that you once thought was a great meal. If it's dead, you don't bring it back today. And the ultimate mark of terrorism, both domestic and foreign, is a hatred of the other, and a certainty that defines dialogue, and an ignorance that embraces the power of the mob and the redemptive force of the Savior. Well, what if I told you the most feared mob are not those burning down some types of convenience stores and restaurants in a neighborhood where someone was shot? But what do you think our attitude would be if they went down to Wall Street or went to the suburbs and the mob was collected outside the homes of the very powerful? What if the most dangerous mob in America are the 8 million millionaires and the corporate CEOs that feed the war and feed the violence, the games that we see, and feed the industrialization, the commodification of junk food? Why don't we look at that mob? And you are the savior, Hillary Clinton, because you're guaranteeing to protect them. I'm Gary Knoll. Some thoughts to think about for my friend and others who feel no compunction, no shame, no sense of irony, that's the devil you know. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day, everyone.